Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Canary. Summer rains are here, and one thing that means is it's mosquito season in Southwest Florida. For the rest of this hour, we're revisiting a conversation Julie Glenn had last month about mosquitoes, exploring everything from the lengths the Lee County Mosquito Control District goes to keep them at bearable levels, to why the biting pests seem to favor some people over others as targets. Let's hear that conversation now.
The official state insect of Florida is the zebra longwing butterfly, a much more pleasant bug than the one that most Floridians love to hate, that being the mosquito. Sometimes jokingly referred to as the state bird, mosquitoes are a part of life here, just like alligators and panthers. And while they are the subject of ridicule and jest, they're also the vectors of serious diseases and are not to be trifled with. That's why the Lee County Mosquito Control District is one of the most robust in the world, and not just for a county, it's bigger than some entire countries, according to a report from back in 2008. And today on the show, we'll get a 2018 update from Eric Jackson with the Lee County Mosquito Control District. We'll find out what the budget looks like and learn more about how they keep the hordes of bloodsuckers at bay. Eric, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
We're also talking with Professor Jonathan F. Day, who's a professor of medical entomology at the University of Florida, IFAS. He's the one who can tell us why mosquitoes like some people and not others, and a little more about the bugs that bug us. Jonathan Day, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Give us a call now because it's Mosquito Day here on Gulf Coast Live, and we're covering the topic from repelling them to understanding what their purpose is in the grand scheme of things. If you have a question for our mosquito control expert or the professor, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So, Professor Day, let's start with you. How many kinds of mosquitoes are there in Florida?
There are about 75 or 76 species.
75 or 76 species?
Yes.
That's kind of more than I thought.
What's that?
That's more than I thought. Are they all in South Florida, or are there some that are only here and not further north?
Yes, there are some that are subtropical and found mainly in South Florida. Some are found throughout the state, and some are more temperate and are found in the northern part of the state.
So which ones are the ones that we're lucky enough to have here down in Southwest Florida?
Most of them.
Oh, we get them all.
Most of them, yeah, definitely.
Wow. Are all these mosquitoes native or any of them invasive?
There are, when I first started, we were fond of saying that there were 67 species, that one for each of the Florida counties. But recently we've had a lot of invasive mosquitoes, a lot of mosquitoes that have been brought in and have become established and are now permanent residents of the state.
How did those guys get here? Do they come in an air cabin on an airplane? Or
that's one way. A lot of mosquitoes lay drought-resistant eggs that are transported around the world. One of the most famous is the Asian tiger mosquito that is transported in used tires. And it's really interesting that there is a that from Asia, a lot of tires are imported into the U.S. to get retreaded. And that's how we think the Asian tiger mosquito was introduced into the United States.
The Asian tiger mosquito sounds especially frightening. Do they bite tigers?
No, it's because the markings, it's actually a beautiful mosquito. The markings are silver and, on a black background, and so they have the appearance of a striped animal. So and most mosquitoes don't have common names. Most mosquitoes only have scientific names, and it's only the ones that are really important that have been given these common names. So the mosquito that transmits yellow fever is the yellow fever mosquito. So there are most mosquitoes only have scientific names.
Scientific names are named after the disease that they help to spread?
Well, the scientific names are Latin. They're Latin nomenclature, so there's a genus and a species. Like the Asian tiger mosquito, the real name is Aedes albopictus.
And then there's Aedes aegypti, which is pretty famous down here.
That's right. That's the yellow fever mosquito.
Yeah, there he is. We have a call already. This is Brian calling in from Cape Coral. Brian, what would you like to ask?
Yeah, I was curious as to what are the type of mosquitoes that are in the area. They look like they're the size of a quarter as far as their foot spread, and they have no qualms about going right through jeans.
Ooh, jeans. Have you heard of this one?
That would be probably the Serafra ciliata. That one's well known too, also called a gallinipper, because it takes a gallon of your blood.
Gallinipper. Yeah,
gallinipper, that's correct.
Oh, wow.
And it's a pretty aggressive mosquito, and it can definitely bite through your shirt.
Bite through jeans. Well, there's your answer there, Brian.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. So Eric Jackson with Lee County Mosquito Control District. I'm going to ask you a quick question. Mm-hmm. What do you think this area would look like if we didn't have mosquito control?
I think it would look very different. I don't think you would have the numbers of people moving down here. I think the tourism industry would be quite different, much shorter season, most likely. So I think you'd have a lot more mosquitoes.
Yeah. And from an epidemiology point of view, Professor Day, what kind of a disease situation would we be looking at if we did not have mosquito control?
Well, it's really hard to say. Malaria would likely be more prevalent throughout the state of Florida. Malaria was once very common in Florida. Some of these other diseases that are transmitted in Florida, like St. Louis encephalitis or West Nile virus, would likely have far more human cases each mosquito season than what we have now. So mosquito control has definitely been very, very important in terms of controlling mosquitoes that are responsible for transmitting human and animal disease.
So, and Eric, with Lee County Mosquito Control District, I want to ask, what exactly does the county do to control mosquitoes? What kind of arsenal are you dealing with here?
We have quite an arsenal. A lot of everything we do is based on surveillance. So the first thing is locating where those mosquitoes are growing. So we have, obviously, you know, we have a lot of water here, a lot of places where mosquitoes can grow. So we're going to go after the larvae first. And that's about 80% of our operation. So that involves a fleet of helicopters. We have ground trucks. We even go by boat looking for sources of larvae. We try to get the larvae first before they become flying adults. If we notice that there is just way too many adults past the threshold that's acceptable for an area, then we're going to go ahead and adulticide. And we have trucks that go by ground for isolated areas in the neighborhoods. And then just like we did last weekend for the first time in 2018, we'll send out fixed-wing aircraft at night to knock them down.
So how do you get the larvae? Do you just kind of put like a film over a pond, for example? That's what I'm imagining.
No, there's a variety of insecticides that can be used. There's some that are bacteria-based that we put some bacteria in the water. The larvae will feed on that, and it will kill the larvae. There's other types that we can go ahead and spray in that water that will focus on killing that mosquito larvae.
Are there any side effects of those things on the ponds? Are there other things in that pond that it could be impacting?
Well, the way that it's calibrated and how we spray and the types of insecticides that we're using, we're focused on being target specific to minimize the effects on non-targets.
Are we looking at things like canals and those ponds? Or are you looking at flat fields that fill up with rain after we get a couple inches?
It's going to be those temporary sources of water. So when you have even salt marshes that flood within the first 4 or 5 days, you'll have that emergence of mosquitoes. The permanent bodies of water aren't going to grow as many mosquitoes because you're going to have aquatics in that water that will feed on them naturally.
Okay, so they have natural predators in the water.
Absolutely.
It's not just the bats that are, you know, so famous that we all seem to give all the credit to.
No, ma'am. There's gambusia, mosquito fish. You've got dragonfly naiads, predaceous diving beetles. There's all kinds of critters in that water, if given enough time that they can populate, that will feed on that larvae.
Professor Day, how important of a food source is the mosquito for a lot of different animals? Because I always kind of wondered what their purpose was. Was it just human population control by spreading disease, or are they an important source of food for other animals?
That's a very common question. And one of my favorite graphics in the Everglades was a food pyramid. And typically, in a food pyramid, the base of the pyramid is the primary producers, and the peak of the pyramid is the primary consumers. And in the Everglades, they've taken the pyramid and turned it upside down because mosquitoes are such an important part of the food chain for fish and for amphibians. And so mosquitoes are really important in terms of the number of animals that feed on them and depend on them as a food source.
So they're not just here to annoy us?
I don't think so.
As a scientist. Such a scientist response. We have another call coming in from Dan in Fort Myers. Dan, what would you like to ask?
My question is regarding the chemicals that they use to spray from helicopters. I've done some research a little bit on it and online and so forth, and it was my understanding that it's best to spray that at night, that during the daytime it has a tendency to kill honeybees and other things, and to that spraying at night when the honeybees are in their hives is better. Why do they spray it during the daytime is my question.
Okay, Dan, that's a good question. I'll let Eric answer that offline. Eric, do you spray at night or during the day when you're using the airplane?
We will treat during the day and at night, but there's two different methods to that. So what the caller's referring to would be adulticiding, which is why we do that at night, because the organophosphates that are used can impact honeybees. So by flying at night while bees are in their hives, we limit that effect. Now, with our helicopters flying during the day, we're larviciding. So that's focused on water treatments with larvicide.
So when people are seeing helicopters during the daytime spraying for mosquitoes, that is when you're doing the 80% of your operation that's for the larva.
For larvae, correct.
And that material, those chemicals that are sprayed during the daytime, are not the ones that impact honeybees?
We're not impacting the bees with that. We're flying over those sources of water that are growing the mosquito larvae.
Oh, that's really good information, because that could be perceived differently. You know, when you're not in the mosquito control world, you don't know which one's happening at what time. So during the day, you're spraying for the larva.
That's correct.
And that's the chemical that does not impact honeybees. So you wait until night to use the adulticide, which is the chemical that can impact honeybees.
It could potentially. And the reason for going at night is that's also when we're going to have most of the mosquito activity. So it makes sense to go after the adults when they're at night, when they're flying.
True story. Yeah. You always get bit at dusk and thereafter. And I want to ask you also a little bit about the size of the operation in Lee County. Mm-hmm. How big is it? How much of a budget is it? How many people are employed there?
Well, it's about $20 million budget.
Every year?
Every year.
Wow.
Right through ad valorem taxes. We have a permanent staff of about 80 people, and then seasonally we can go up to about 120, sometimes 130, depending on the need for the night missions that we're doing.
Now, do you do anything in what we would consider mosquito off-season, like during the wintertime? Is there much need to do anything?
Right. There is what we call a mosquito season is going to be in the spring after those first tides, going all the way through into the late fall. But there's really no end to mosquitoes here. Due to the subtropical environment. So we're out inspecting all the time. And even when things tend to slow down, there's a lot of work to be done in the field. We've got heliports all over the county, LZs that were called landing zones, where we'll actually land the helicopters to go do inspections. So all of those have to be maintained. So it really is a truly year-round operation.
It's pretty big. I mean, how would you compare Lee County to other counties in the state?
Well, we're definitely the largest in the state.
Why do you think that is? Is it because we're willing to put that money towards it, or is it because we have more mosquitoes?
Well, I think it's the big part is looking at our area, looking at Lee County, and you look at the fact that we have 60,000 acres of salt marsh. We have a lot of area to control, and that's best done aerially for us, which then raises the budget. But the people of Lee County are also very focused on mosquito control and see it as a necessity, which is why there's so much effort put into that. There are other counties that may not have as large of a budget as us, do not have as large of a budget as us, but it's all based on what the needs are.
There are countries that don't have budgets like that.
Well, there's a lot of countries.
Yeah, there are a lot of countries.
But, I mean, if you take, for instance, the Keys, which would be the second largest, I mean, they definitely have less of a budget than us. But you also look, they have a similar problem. They have a lot of areas that they need to control and control by air.
Yeah. And then, Professor Day, controlling mosquitoes is more than just getting rid of a nuisance. I was in a doctor's office recently, and I saw a poster talking about Zika. And I remember people being terrified at a couple of years ago. But we're not hearing as much about it. Is that because of mosquito control, that it didn't get a foothold?
In part, for sure. Zika is transmitted by the mosquito we talked about a little bit before, Aedes aegypti. Mosquito control has definitely impacted Aedes aegypti populations. And so in order for Zika to get a foothold in Florida, And it did the very first year. It had a foothold in South Miami Beach where there was local transmission. There were people that were being bitten by local infected mosquitoes, and those people were becoming infected. In order for Zika to really get a foothold throughout the state, there has to be a significant Aedes aegypti population, and there has to be significant mosquito exposure to those mosquitoes. And we just don't have it. And that's the reason that dengue virus and chikungunya virus and Zika virus may get imported into the state, and in very rare instances, we may have local transmission where there are locally infected mosquitoes. But for the most part, we do not see local transmission of those really important viruses in Florida because we don't have the human-to-mosquito contact that you need to maintain a transmission cycle.
It seems like you have to have a critical mass, a number of people with the infection, and then also a number of mosquitoes coming into contact with those people.
Right, and the other thing about those three viruses plus malaria is that there's a human-to-mosquito-to-human transmission cycle. And when you talk about something like West Nile virus, there's a wild bird, what we call an amplification host, where wild birds serve as the amplification host. So you can have a significant amount of virus amplification between mosquitoes and wild birds before you get spillover to humans. And that's why viruses like Eastern equine encephalitis and St. Louis encephalitis and West Nile virus are permanent residents of Florida, and they have permanent transmission cycles. You have transmission of those viruses every single year. In fact, right now, up in North Florida, there's a real problem with Eastern equine encephalitis building. And so we're quite concerned about the area of North Florida and getting human cases in that area this summer.
Are there other bugs that carry diseases like this? Are mosquitoes just unique because of their the way that they are, you know, biting everyone, the bloodsuckers that they are?
Any arthropod that feeds on blood has the ability to transmit disease. So ticks are a very important disease transmitter. Fleas, black flies, any blood-feeding arthropod has the potential of being a transmitting disease to humans and domestic animals and wild animals.
Is there something that you can tell me, Professor, about the behavior of mosquito that we may not know about, things that might be helpful to help people avoid them? One old-timer told me one time to stay out of shade because mosquitoes like shade, so go out in the sunshine. And then I was talking to Eric here a second ago. He said that, well, that depends on the kind of mosquito it is. There are some that'll just go right out into the sunshine and chase you down the street. Is there like an overall mosquito behavior that would be helpful for us to understand?
Well, I think one of the real interesting things about mosquitoes is that any sort of wind inhibits their flight. So mosquitoes, that's why mosquitoes tend to fly very close to the ground to stay out of any sort of wind. And so homeowners can actually use that information to help them. If you have a pool area where there are mosquitoes or biting midges, the no-see-ums that are bothering you, installing fans will really help cut down on the number of mosquitoes that are active in that area. So a mosquito or a biting midge's inability to fly in windy conditions can really be used to help us around our homes.
That's a really good piece of information. I'm wondering, since you mentioned the backyard pool area, there are lanai screens that are being marketed out there saying that they're able to keep out the no-see-ums and the mosquitoes. Have you seen those be successful in actually keeping these guys out?
Yeah, they are, for sure. But one of the issues that you run into with screening is that if the weave of the screen is tight enough to prevent the entry of biting midges, it also drastically cuts down on the breeze. And in Florida, we definitely want a breeze. In most porch areas or areas where we're going to be spending time outdoors.
Eric, I want to ask you, do you have any tips or ideas as far as mosquito avoidance or things? I didn't realize they were so susceptible to a little breeze or a ceiling fan.
Yeah, I think that what Dr. Day mentioned is absolutely correct in terms of putting box fans down, especially like around tables or things if you're sitting outside in your lanai, is really helpful. We get calls a lot saying, what can we do? Can we put misting systems in the backyard? Can we set all this up to avoid them? And really that box fan that you pick up at Walmart is really helpful. Get a few of them and put them in the corners, blowing that air around.
That is probably the most valuable tip I've heard in like the last several months. I just love knowing that now.
Well, thank Jonathan for that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Both of you guys. We're talking today with Eric Jackson. He's the public information officer for the Lee County Mosquito Control District, which is one of the biggest mosquito control operations in the country. And we're also joined by Dr. Jonathan Day. He's a professor of medical entomology at the University of Florida. And we're learning about mosquitoes. If you have any questions, give us a call, 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. And Dr. Day, there are a lot of things that people say with great certainty that may be old wives' tales, and I wanted to ask you if you could clarify. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about is why mosquitoes like some people instead of others. And I'm suspicious about blood type. Have you heard this one?
Yes, if I can, I'll give you the broad answer and then a more specific answer. And I think there are two issues. One is individual sensitivity. Some people are oblivious to mosquitoes being present. They can fly around and people don't notice. They don't care. And if you were to question them, they'd say, I don't think there's a mosquito problem. Other people, one mosquito flying around just drives them nuts. And so their perception would be, all the mosquitoes are coming to me. So I think there's a sensitivity issue on the one hand, and on the other hand, there are definitely people, because of their individual metabolisms, those people attract more mosquitoes. They produce more carbon dioxide. They produce more the secondary attractants that mosquitoes are keying in on. So blood type is, there have been mixed reports in the scientific literature about blood type. And one of the reports was that people with blood type O tend to attract more mosquitoes. Well, blood type O is the most prevalent blood type there is. And so there have been other reports that have said there's no blood type that's more attractive or less attractive than another. And I think I tend to fall into the group where I don't think blood type is a really important part. Because, for one thing, I don't think mosquitoes can sense blood type from a distance. I don't think there's any cue that individuals put out that say what type of blood they have. And so I just don't buy the blood type argument.
Okay. Well, anecdotally, I have to say, I've been around blood type O people, and I'm just going to call them drama queens from now on, because they claim that they are the ones that just get attacked by these guys. Is there anything else? I mean, you said that people that emit more carbon dioxide?
Yes.
So maybe somebody who just worked out is huffing and panting. Is that what you're talking about?
And people that have a naturally high metabolic rate that produce more carbon dioxide. All biting arthropods, all arthropods that have to find a vertebrate host and take a blood meal have a problem. They have to be able to separate a vertebrate host that's producing carbon dioxide from a Volkswagen Beetle that's producing carbon dioxide. And so they cue in on carbon dioxide as their main as the main source of information that there's a potential host there. But then they also cue in on a bunch of secondary cues that vertebrates produce. Acetone, which is a byproduct of respiration, lactic acid, that's a byproduct of muscle firing, are both really important cues. And so that's why somebody who is just finishing up a workout When you finish up a run and they're stretching in the early morning, the mosquitoes just flock to you because your CO2 rate is off the charts as far as they're concerned, and you become a really good target under those conditions.
And then add to that the muscles firing and all that, and the lactic.
That's right, the lactic acid, yeah. And the acetone, and increased body temperature, increased surface body temperature. Temperature is a really important cue that mosquitoes use to locate a host.
That's a pretty good point, too. So if you're out there working out in the morning, go inside to do your after-workout stretches.
Right. If the mosquitoes are bad.
No matter how bad you smell, you just deal with it.
Yeah, but fortunately, there are many, many mornings where the mosquitoes are just not that bad. And I'm a type O, and I don't even notice them.
Really? Okay.
Yep.
So it is probably just people being dramatic about the...
Probably.
The mosquitoes are out to get me.
Yep.
So, Eric, tell me a little bit about how the work of the University of Florida and Dr. Jonathan Day, how that kind of work impacts what you and the Mosquito Control District are doing year after year. What kind of advances are you able to come up with based on the research done by scientists in the state?
It's essential to our operation because everything that we do, we want to be scientifically based. So it's a research that Jonathan's doing. And then also through our Florida Mosquito Control Association, that network of academia and operations is absolutely essential to us to do our job.
It's not just the scientific advances, but it's also mechanical advances. Our producer was saying that he remembers when his family first moved to Fort Myers in 1980, the district was using old World War II era bombers to spray. Those were a little bit on the louder side.
Well, they can be on the louder side, but you know what? We're still using DC-3s. It's just people aren't noticing them because we've shifted in when we use them. So like the caller had mentioned before, we used to adulticide in the morning. But that has changed for best practice to adulticide at night. So we still have those DC-3s in the air. They're just using an ultra-low volume mist as opposed to what we call thermal fogging. But it's because of those advancements that we're moving forward and really doing a better job.
So you still have those World War II bombers around?
Yeah, we have two DC-3s that we use.
What makes them good to use? Is this because of their maneuverability?
It's because of their safety. Really, and their payload ability. I mean, you're flying very low. You're flying at 300 feet above the treetops. They're very stable. They can fly slow, and they do the job very, very well.
So what's the deal with the trucks that drive around with the big, huge cones on top?
Oh, the trap trucks?
Yeah.
That's for surveillance. So we have routes all over the county. We run this program between May and October, and we're going to run at night for a set distance and figure out what species are flying at what times. So then we'll take that information and figure out, okay, where are those mosquitoes flying in which part of the county?
So that's how you do the counts and you decide then?
That's one of the ways that we do that. We also trap. We have different types of traps that we use all over the county. Even when someone will call in and for a service request saying that they're having a big problem with mosquitoes, we'll send inspectors to check it out.
If they're blood type O or if they're just whiners.
We don't check that out. And we won't anymore now that Jonathan said that. But no, what we'll do is we'll actually set traps and then go back the next day, check and see what is that problem that's there and what are the mosquitoes, that, if there are any, that are causing the problem.
And Dr. Day, you talked about different people's perception about how the world's out to get them or the mosquitoes are out to get them or if it's real or based in reality. Do people react differently to mosquito bites? Is it a histamine, or is it an allergic reaction to the bite?
Yes, they definitely do. Most people, when you're bitten by one of the 75 or 80 mosquito species that are in Florida, the first time you're bitten, you tend to have a reaction. It welts up, it's itchy. That's why kids react so badly to mosquito bites, because they don't have any immune system memory to that bite. But what happens for most people is that after you're bitten a couple times, your immune system produces cells that recognize the antigen that the mosquito introduces when it's feeding, and you don't react anymore. Some people have just the opposite reaction, where the more they're bitten, the more severe the reaction. It's very similar to bee stings, where some people develop a real sensitivity to bee stings, and the more you're stung, the worse the reaction. And so for a few people, go that way with mosquito bites. And I had a technician who worked for me for years who grew up in Pakistan and was bitten by Aedes aegypti mosquitoes all the time. And by the time he finished his career here, if he got bit by an Aedes aegypti, he would have a really severe reaction. So, most people, as they age and are bitten, they just don't respond anymore. But for very few, it becomes a real critical health issue.
I think that's kind of how poison ivy works. Sometimes you get into it, and the more you get into it, the worse it gets every time you get exposed to it.
Right. I mean, as a kid, I was really sensitive to poison ivy, and now I know I've gotten into it, and it doesn't bother me at all.
We had a question come from one of our producers. He's asking, and I'm going to put this to both of you guys, do we have any idea how people handled mosquitoes way back in history, like the Calusa Indians? Do either of you have any idea of old home remedies they used to use?
I don't know about remedies. I know there wasn't really a choice. you just dealt with them.
There's a really interesting publication that I have a copy of about how Native Americans dealt with mosquitoes. One is that they had such a good idea about nature and the things that produce mosquito populations, and there were times where they would just leave. So, for example, in this East Coast Florida, the populations would migrate inland during the rainy season, and then they'd spend the dry season out on the coast when mosquito populations were low. So they knew exactly what the mosquito populations were doing. And then, of course, anybody who's been camping knows that one of the best things you can do is sit in the smoke stream of a campfire to avoid mosquitoes, or smoke a big old cigar. So they know that smoke would help them, and then bear oil was a really important repellent that they used to prevent mosquito bites. And so the native, I would love to be able to go back and just see how native populations dealt with that problem, because it is a big problem, and you have to be very aware of nature and what nature is producing and deal with it before you get those landing rates of 500 a minute.
I'm going to talk. We have one more question coming in on the phone, but we're almost out of time, so I'm going to ask you real quick. Dawn says she's a mosquito magnet. Any home remedies once you get a bite? What did your friend from Pakistan do when he got those bad bites?
Well, he was in a position where he had to avoid mosquitoes because it became a real important health issue. For me, when I get bites that I react to that are really itchy, I mean, you want to avoid scratching because of the potential secondary infections, but rubbing alcohol really helps me, helps take the swelling and the itching away for me. So I always have alcohol, rubbing alcohol on hand, and if I do have a reaction, I treat the bite with the rubbing alcohol.
Eric, do you use the same thing?
I would say exactly the same thing. But, you know, in most cases, now with my kids, they can react pretty badly to it. But usually goes away pretty quickly as well.
Yeah. Just try to ignore it.
Right. Try to ignore it.
Instead of scratching it, tell her to smack it.
Exactly.
Just hit it. Well, that's all the time we have for this part of the show, but I want to thank my guest, Eric Jackson. He's a public information officer for the Lee County Mosquito Control District. Eric, thanks so much for coming in today.
Well, thanks for having me.
And Dr. Jonathan F. Day is a professor of medical entomology at the University of Florida. Dr. Day, I really appreciate your time as well.
Thank you.
That is all the time we have for today's show. Thanks to our earlier guest, Debbie Hughes, from the Edison and Ford Winter Estates in Fort Myers, during our segment about counting butterflies. Our show today was produced by Julie Glenn and myself. Our director is Richard Chen Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Kneire. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.